I think beverage is the innovation battlefield in the restaurant industry right now. When we look at limited time offers, LTOs, non-alcoholic beverage lead by far over any other segment of the menu or any other product category. Restaurants have realized through their actions, or they've shown through their actions, that beverage is a place that they want to focus on. And you don't have to look any further than Yum Brands or McDonald's with their Cosmix or a whole slew of QSRs that have invested heavily.
Good afternoon. We're back and we're live here today on the Chad GTM podcast, episode number 29. Chad, is that right?
No, but who's counting?
Yeah, well, somebody's counting. I'm trying to count. I keep resetting the counter, so I'll call our accountant.
It's close.
Okay, it's close enough. Good enough for horseshoes, hand grenades, and podcasting. And so with that being said, patiently waiting here in the wings is Mr. David Henkes. He is one of the awesome folks over at Technomic. As usual, my partner in crime, we've established this last episode, very much like Ocean's 11, Mr. Chad Horn. What was the look, Chad?
I'm just glad to be here. Thanks for the not too scary intro. Appreciate it.
Yep, and we're not doing sidekicks anymore. So, David, thanks for enduring that long rolling introduction. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And the first question is, how are you today?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me. It was a great introduction, one of the best I've ever had. And so I'm thrilled to be here and chat with you today. Thanks for inviting me on.
Hey now. So for the audience listening, if you're in hospitality technology, if you're in hospitality, you run a restaurant, you've been to a trade show in the last 5 years, I would say, I don't know how you wouldn't know who Technomic is. But the goal of this episode is to really let you know more about Technomic, things they're working on, dispel any common misconceptions about what they do. And as a fellow data geek, Chad and I are really going to go, how do you get it? How do you true it up? Where are you getting this stuff from? We got lots of questions.
Sure.
But for the start here, the last time we saw David was in the press room at the National Restaurant Association show in Chicago. And David, you and a fantastic panel of experts, including Marcus Vicitti from Informa, had given us, sat up in front of us and gave us a presentation on kind of the industry state of the union, where things are going.
Yep.
Pursuant that show, how let's talk about what you talked about there just briefly, and then how that's evolved since in the last couple of months since.
Yeah, so we were thrilled to do the press breakfast. So just a quick introduction by way of who I am and who Technomic is. So Technomic is a food service industry, really, research, consulting, and data firm. We've been around since 1966, so we've been doing this a long time. I think we're the oldest firm that has been doing data, research, and insights in restaurants and food service. We came out with our first top chain list in 1970. We've done a lot of firsts, and we were founded by a gentleman named Ron Paul, who unfortunately passed away last year. But for the last 2 years or so, we've been part of a bigger global company called Informa. Informa also owns the restaurant show. And so disclosure, Technomic is part of that group. And that's one of the reasons that if you were at the restaurant show, you saw myself and a lot of my colleagues all around the show because we're the official research partner of the show. And so, and I've been doing this. I've been at Technomic 29 years. So I've been doing this a long time myself. I started when I was 3 years old. And so I'm finally, getting into it a little bit.
You're doing the Benjamin Button.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going backwards. Right? Yeah. So I've been doing this a long time. I've seen Technomic evolve from, just a small firm doing custom research projects into this big global firm. And we track 1,500 chain restaurants. We track the industry. A lot of what we do and people know us for are sort of what's the state of the industry, what's going on in the industry, what are consumers doing, what's happening on the menus, right? We have all of that data. And then the area that I sit in does a lot of the custom engagements for clients. And so I'm in what's called our advisory group. And so, you know, just going back to the restaurant show, one of the things that the whole point of that press breakfast was to highlight some things going on in the industry. And so, you know, what we talked about were economic conditions and sort of the softness that we were seeing even back in May, and that's continued through the present day. We talked about some value and value recalibration and what value means in the current sort of state of the industry. We talked about wellness and sort of consumer trends and labor and what's happening with the operator, supply chain, you know, shift between on-premise and off-premise, delivery takeout versus dine-in, sustainability, all of these things we talked about, right? And so there's huge trends happening in the industry. I've maintained now for a while that it's harder than ever for a restaurant, particularly an independent restaurant, to profitably run their business. So yeah. A lot of what we talked about, given industry conditions and the softness that we're seeing in terms of traffic, in terms of consumer spend, exacerbate and really highlight these challenges that restaurant operators are having. And so it's kind of a long-winded answer to what did I talk about at the press breakfast, but that's a little bit about Technomic and a little bit about what we're seeing in the industry right now.
It was a long breakfast too. You weren't going to cover it all anyways.
If I could jump in real quick, David, even since the breakfast, I just think how much has changed in the country, in the world since then. And now more than ever, things are super dynamic. How often do you update? Maybe this is the wrong way to frame the question. How often do you update your reports, forecasts, insights into what's going on in the industry, given how rapidly everything's changing geopolitically?
Yeah, well, there's a couple answers to that. One is we have a monthly report that we call our Tindex, the Technomic Index, that we index every month based upon, we have a distributor sales feed, we have consumer data, we have restaurant data, we have consumer and credit card data. So every month we're providing at least an initial snapshot of what we see. And it's a preliminary snapshot. It's, you know, kind of like some of the early government data numbers, but we'll provide a monthly data feed in terms of just what's happening in the industry. Is it up, down? What are we seeing? It's just a quick snapshot. We revise our forecasts probably 3 to 4 times a year. Okay. I would say in normal times, it's maybe 3. We did a special one this year. Given everything that's happening, particularly, I would say, with the tariff situation, mm-hmm. with consumer confidence, we actually have gone back to something we were doing during COVID, which is doing scenario analysis, because forecasting mm-hmm. food service in the restaurant industry right now is anybody's guess, right? It's just there's so many variables, and a lot of it has to do with consumers, how they feel about their own situation, what's happening with tariffs. Tariffs aren't necessarily directly impacting the industry as much as it's directly impacting consumer confidence, consumer willingness to spend, prices in other cars and things that consumers are buying. And so given the uncertainty and just what's happening with the current administration and some of, you know, there's a 30% tariff one day and it's been relaxed or postponed the next day. And so we have to run scenarios because we just don't know where things are going to net out. So we update that. We just came out with a revised forecast probably about a month ago. We'll relook at it again in the fall. And then we typically sort of wrap up the year and you know, button up the previous year and call it January as we're then forecasting going forward. We also do a 5-year forecast, what we call our long-term forecast, that we're updating at the same time we do our annual industry forecast. So we are updating that 3 to 4 times a year as well.
In line with that, David, the rapid onset of AI tools going, you know, proliferating the marketplace, clearly it probably changed the game for how you guys are organizing data, researching. Or is it? Is it? Have you leaned into that, or is there still the worry of the hallucinations? What might come back on this research, or how has the business changed since that's come in?
Yeah, I would say AI has become a really critical tool for us. But one of the things we want to avoid, and we've seen some other companies do this, where I think to your point, hallucination and just AI is only as good as what it pulls. And so we actually had an example where we asked it for some coffee trends. And it pulled data from 5 years ago from a website that it scraped. And so AI is a great tool, but it can't replace what we consider to be our significant point of difference, and that's our expertise. And so we let AI do a lot of the number crunching, and you know, and even 3-4 years ago, we were calling it machine learning before AI sort of became the term, right? And so, but yeah, we use it as, you know, sort of an initial tool to forecast, to make projections, but nothing replaces the human expertise that we've developed over our, you know, almost 60 years in existence. And so we really lean into our expertise, and we let AI do a lot of the time consuming number crunching, or, you know, sort of finding patterns here and there. And our parent company Informa actually has its own sort of proprietary AI system that's kind of ChatGPT-ish. We call it Alicia. We've debated how to actually pronounce it here, but you know, and so AI is a tool for writing letters or synthesizing data, and so it's certainly a tool, but I would say at least for us, it's not replacing you know, the expertise that we believe we bring and that differentiates us from anyone else in the market.
It feels almost like you should have a walled garden when you do that kind of thing for what you're doing. You have the golden set that you know is validated and good, and then you put it in there and you apply it or something.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do is avoid putting our reports into a ChatGPT, right? Because where they now become sort of part of you know, everybody's search, and you know, we don't want to necessarily. And we've got proprietary reports and we've got things. So we want to sort of keep that, to your point, in kind of our walled garden and use that internally. And, you know, and use that. It's been a great tool. And I think AI is fundamentally changing how a lot of analysis gets done. But at the end of the day, it's still, I don't think it's quite there yet. It's not perfect, and it's getting better, but I think it's still going to be a long ways before it replaces the human element, at least in our business, in terms of just the knowledge and understanding of the business and then communicating that out to our clients.
Absolutely agreed. And before I hand it off to you, just one note. We were talking about this yesterday with a peer, and he's like, well, AI is going to take over everything. Well, you can also teach somebody how to make a plane. Here's a manual. Have a nice day. You still have to have knowledge and wisdom and the ability to execute and understand what's in whatever it outputs to you. It's not a matrix download. It's not going to change how you fundamentally look at things. It can offer information, but the expertise, like you're mentioning, that's the value.
Yeah.
How you apply that wisdom.
And I think that's how we view it. And so, you know, AI is, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's just another tool because it's a really valuable tool, but
it's a very cool tool.
It's a cool tool. And it does a lot of things that, you know, that it can do in seconds that used to take hours or even days to do.
Yeah.
But it is still at the end of the day, just one tool in our whole toolbox of different things that we use for our analysis.
So David, what stood out to you the most in your latest forecasts in the industry?
Well, I think what I look at, and you know, and again, we're doing scenarios, but one of the things that I really find interesting is we look at traffic patterns, right? Traffic has been for restaurants, when we look at restaurants, there's full service restaurants and, you know, sit down restaurants, and then there's fast food or limited service restaurants. I would say historically, in times of uncertainty, consumers have traded down to limited service, to fast food restaurants. But what we're seeing and what our forecasts and projections show is that part of the business is been flat and in some cases declining, right? You look at some of the big chains right now that are struggling, Starbucks, McDonald's, you know, certainly there's other chains that are doing really well, but for the most part, even chains that are historically refuges from higher prices, from economic uncertainty, are not doing great. And full service restaurants, really after a 2-year spike coming out of COVID, which was mostly a recovery bounce, full service restaurants have been, from a traffic perspective, declining month over month, quarter over quarter, year over year. And so we're in an industry right now. And again, some of our scenarios show a little bit of growth maybe happening. But for the most part, 2024 was flat from a traffic perspective. 2025 will probably be flat to down. And so really what's happening in the industry is all of the growth, the revenue growth is coming from higher prices, right? So inflation remains this huge challenge for consumers. And remember, inflation's not just a month over month number. It's a cumulative number that has been going on now really since 2022, right? And so menu prices are probably on average about 35% higher than they were pre-pandemic. Labor prices are 35, 40% higher than they were. Everything is just higher. And what that's meant is that consumers' ability to spend, even though their incomes have been going up, menu prices have outpaced people's incomes. Yeah. And so as a natural result, they've pulled back. They're not spending as much because they feel, and we all feel it as consumers, right, that it's just gotten really expensive to eat out. And so those traffic patterns that I was talking about really reflect the fact that consumers are pulling back, especially on a lot of their day-to-day convenience-driven everyday occasions, right? They still want that special occasion. They still want to go out and they're going to spend money and celebrate and that type of thing. But you know, those are fewer and far between than just those everyday, I'm going to stop for coffee at, you know, the drive-thru. I'm going to go out with my family on a Wednesday night for dinner. And so, you know, our sense is that the industry, and as we look ahead to when growth is going to start to happen again, and remember, we're in a fairly low unemployment economy. The stock market is doing well. And for all this talk about tariffs and everything, none of them have really hit yet, right? So this is all more expectations rather than reality.
Reaction, right?
It's reaction. But until menu price inflation really starts to fall and catch up and people's incomes can catch up with restaurant pricing, we don't think we're going to see a ton of growth in the industry. And that's really the reality of it. And so restaurants are discounting. They're trying all sorts of things. They're putting deals in the app. They're innovating around value. And I think, you know, there's a couple exceptions that always prove the rule of what's going on. And that's chains like Chili's, you know, that are growing double digit. Longhorn Steakhouse is one. Texas Roadhouse is another one. You know, a couple of the fast casual chains are doing pretty well, Sweetgreen and others.
What do they all have in common? I mean, the ones that are doing good in this environment, there's got to be some common thread.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, and we've done a lot of research into it. I think there's a value play, but again, it's not low price. It's a value play. And I think Chili's, and let's just focus on Chili's because they're probably in a casual dining, you know, casual dining has been flat for decades now, right? And so, you know, the improbable return of Chili's is a case study in how to run a restaurant. And so there's a couple things they do really well. One is social media, the cheese pull and the whole thing on TikTok. It's brilliant craveability and they're targeting the younger consumers. I've got, you know, three boys. Chili's is in the consideration set for them again. They're all, you know, 24 and younger. Chili's is in the consideration set again for the younger consumer, and they've become cool again. I think a couple other things that they do is their staff is trained really well. They are, and it's interesting, they are very much, you know, the CEO is very responsive to the needs of the unit manager, and they empower the general manager. I think one of the underappreciated things in the restaurant industry is if you have an empowered general manager, that changes the whole dynamic because now you've got somebody that sets the culture at the restaurant.
You get creative.
And I think all of these chains, because they're more corporate driven as opposed to franchise driven.
Yeah.
They're more responsive to corporate directives, but they're also given more empowerment to make changes. And I think that's part of the problem, right? Because restaurants over the last 15, 20 years have grown through franchising. That's been the low risk, sort of low cost way to expand.
Yeah.
The commonality that a lot of successful chains have right now is that they're less, not perhaps not, you know, not 0% franchise, but they're less franchised. And as a result, there's a little bit more ability for corporate to quality make changes control, right? And focus on the quality. And so, you know, and there's a lot of other things that go into it. But I think, you know, that general manager can't be understated, the importance of that. And if you have a great system to bring in and train and keep and retain general managers, it's going to make your whole life as a CEO of a restaurant company that much easier.
Is there data on Red Lobster's turnaround yet?
So, yeah, we haven't seen a lot of new data coming out. I think, you know, their new CEO.
Dynamic guy. That guy is everywhere, like just leaning into it. Yeah.
He's made the rounds for sure. I did something. I was on a, I wasn't with him, but I was on the same. The Wall Street Journal did sort of a long form video with him and sort of their plans. And I think he's got the right plans. But you know, these turnarounds don't happen overnight either. And so,
right.
You know, he's got probably, you know, not even a year under his belt yet. And so, I think it'll take a little bit longer. And I think changing consumers' perceptions, right? I mean, all of this stuff is a little bit more of a long-term play for Red Lobster. And I think in an environment where sometimes, you know, especially with the rise of private equity, that the companies are sometimes a little too quick to pull the CEO when things aren't going right because they're beholden to quarterly share prices and things like that. I think you've got to let your CEO have enough runway to make the changes and see them through. And so we're still very much in early days with Red Lobster, but I'm cautiously optimistic that he's got the right plans in place. And, you know, I guess we'll see. It's a fickle business and, you know, it's still a lot of headwinds for full service sit down restaurants, but you know, some of these other chains have shown that it can be done.
I want to show the applicability of your data in like a real thing I think would happen to brands, right? Which is, let's say I'm browsing the internet. And I see a story, some trend, banana flavored coffee. It's big. I see an article. I Google it. Oh, there's a lot of articles. How do I interface with Technomic to validate that this is a trend for real, that it's significant, I should care? And that it has any kind of life to it, that I should even waste my time even investigating this and responding to it as a brand, if I'm a coffee brand, obviously. Walk us through that kind of journey with Technomic.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the first place that most of our clients would go to, we've got what we call our... So all of our data is housed on a platform we call Ignite. And so yeah. Ignite houses all of our consumer data, all of our industry and chain data. We've got all of our location data on there for every restaurant in the country, basically. It's all Ignite houses all of our syndicated data. And it includes our menu data as well. And so we've been tracking menus. And I think even, you know, going back again to my history, we used to put out a quarterly written report on just, you know, publishing menus of different restaurant chains. And over time, you know, that's grown into an online searchable database where we are able to immediately identify trends. And so within a menu life cycle, right, where is a flavor in terms of how many menus it's on, how it's being used, how it's being applied to a menu item. And so whether it's an introductory stage where we're just seeing it sort of independent fine dining restaurants where most food trends start, mm-hmm. or is it starting to come into the mainstream, or is it mature, or is it declining, right? Those are kind of the four stages of the menu life cycle. I think the first thing that most of our clients would do is go to our menu tool, which again tracks tens of thousands of restaurants in terms of, you know, just their actual menus. And what's being menued and look, and you can type in either an ingredient, you can type in a product category, you can type in a flavor, and it'll give you where it's being menued, how many restaurants menu it, the key applications, what part of the menu is it on? Is it a beverage? Is it an entree? Is it a side dish? Is it dessert?
Estimating food cost in there too.
It's tracking the menu and if there's a price on the menu. So it's basically capturing anything that's on the menu. We've got different things that get into food costs and things like that. But this is really just more of a menu trends identification, mm-hmm. right? And so if anyone was at the restaurant show, I had two colleagues, Lizzie and Donna, that gave a big main stage presentation on menu trends. And a lot of, you know, what we're seeing comes from that database. But that's where our clients would go and say, okay, you know, what was your example? What was it again?
Banana flavored coffee.
I'm trying to forget it because I don't ever want banana coffee.
Banana flavored coffee. So, you know, you could type that in and you could see, okay, you know, it's starting to trend and then geographically too, right? Does it appear in one part of the country versus the other part, or where are we starting to see it emerge? And then beyond that, right? So now you have at least some data in hand that say, okay, it looks like it's a trend worth identifying. I run a program called our Beverage Navigator, which is more of a kind of a total look at beverage size, growth, segmentation. You might go to that program. You might go to and say, hey, you know, we want to roll one out. And so I've got 10 concepts that I want to test with consumers. We can run concept tests to say, okay, here's different ways that banana is being used in a cold brew or in a frappuccino or in a, you know, in a hot coffee. Hmm. And test those and get consumer reaction to those and purchase intent and likelihood to, that it's going to drive a visit and all of these metrics that are going to be really important that are wow. going to help an operator decide whether it makes sense or not. And, you know, and so there's probably a number of steps that someone would go through, but it starts with the data and then it leads to the innovation and, you know, and an initiative that maybe you're going to roll something out. And so we want to test it, figure out how big the potential market size is for it. And then ultimately we do also track limited time offers. And so once something rolls out in a limited time offer, we are running a lot of tests on how effective it is for operators and we're testing with consumers so that consumers can tell operators what they like or don't like about that LTO. And, you know, is it craveable? Is it going to make me come back to the restaurant? Things like that. And so we really can support from sort of trend identification through sort of building out a product, a prototype, an innovation description or the product, all the way through to helping develop it and then testing it once it's in the market.
So when we were at NRA, I believe it was NRA, you were talking about, you know, beverage innovation as a major growth engine.
Yep.
What brands do you think or segments are doing it best?
Well, I've said publicly, and I'll say it again, I think beverage is the innovation battlefield in the restaurant industry right now. When we look at limited time offers, LTOs, non-alcoholic beverage lead by far over any other menu, segment of the menu or any other product category. So restaurants have realized through their actions or they've shown through their actions that beverage is a place that they want to focus on. Mm. And you don't have to look any further than Yum Brands or McDonald's with their Cosmics or a whole slew of QSRs that have invested heavily, whether it's in brand new concepts like yep. Cosmics was, which was essentially an incubator to test out new items. Now they're going to close all of those and roll those into McDonald's, which I think was always going to be the case.
Yeah.
But you know, and then you've got players like the Seven Brews, Dutch Bros, HTO, right? I mean, these are all Swig is another one with the dirty soda. All of these are really fast growing chains and they're growing off of a small base because they're certainly not the size of McDonald's yet, but
right.
they are growing and becoming national powerhouse chains. And so, you know, beverage concepts as a whole are doing really well. Now, the category last year was a little flatter than it should have been because Starbucks had a very un-Starbucks-like year last year. But a lot of their competitors really did very well. And so I think when you look at beverage, the interesting thing is that it's all cold beverage and it's all we're seeing a lot of refresher type drinks, right? Mm. So fruit flavored drinks or, you know, a lot of them have concentrate or syrups or things like that. Energy drinks are doing really well. So there's a lot of them are kind of hard to classify because it might like even a dirty soda, right? It's a soft drink right. or, you know, a soda with a cream or a dairy product in it. And so, you know, so there's a lot of innovation happening in beverage. And I think where consumers are looking for, they don't want something that they can easily do at home. And so whether it's a, you know, a cold brew coffee with, you know, all sorts of different ingredients or it's steeped in a special way or these refreshers mm-hmm. that are very hard to make and, you know, they're handcrafted. I think those are where a lot of the innovation is happening and hot beverage is kind of getting left behind, right? I mean, hot beverage is essentially hot espresso or hot coffee, hot teas, hot chocolate. Well,
it's falling into more seasonal, right?
Yeah, it's becoming more seasonal. And listen, I mean, coffee's still, you know, coffee, if you add up hot and cold coffee, is the largest beverage category in food service. But all of the growth right now is happening on the cold side. And so, you know, cold beverage innovation is where it's happening. And I think we see it, you know, bear out with some of those chains that we talked about. And in some of those categories that we talked about where, you know, many really smart restaurant executives are leaning in heavily on beverage. And I think that's, you know, it's going to, it's not everyone's going to be able to win on it. While beverage is growing pretty fast, cold beverage, you know, I mean, there is still sort of a saturation point, right, for the market. So we'll see how they all play out. But I think everybody's pretty bullish on cold beverage right now within restaurants.
I never thought there'd be a day in my life I'd stand in the drive-through to pick up a drink. When I was a younger man. Now I do it all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, when Cosmic's first opened, the first one opened outside Chicago here, I waited 45 minutes in line, and that was over holiday weekend where I thought it was going to be a quicker time. I mean, some people, when it first opened, waited hour and a half in the drive-through line.
Wow.
And, you know, and literally there was an actual McDonald's right next door to the Cosmic's, and there was nobody in that drive-through line, and everybody was waiting for Cosmic's. And so it clearly tapped into something where people knew they were getting something different and unique. And I think that, you know, they've taken those learnings and they've realized that, you know, rather than having 10 Cosmic's, let's roll these out to every McDonald's in the country, and your ROI and your ability to grow is going to be so much greater than just trying to grow a 10-unit Cosmic's concept into 100 units, right? Or I mean, it would take a long time for that to even be more than a rounding error for McDonald's. And so, I think they were smart and they took those learnings, and now it's going to hopefully drive some sales for them at their core concept.
So it's kind of like a modern McCafe push, but with cold beverages.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they, you know, and it's interesting. I was just in a couple, I've been traveling internationally, and there's still a ton of McCafes. I was down in Brazil, there's McCafes. I was over in Europe. McCafe still is a fairly effective brand for them globally. But I think this is something now where they are, you know, taking some of those beverage learnings, and they're going to create, and, you know, I don't know how they're going to position them, but I think, you know, they're going hard toward beverages.
Well, that's a good segue into where I want to go next. So, you know, over the last few years, we've seen some technology players and vendors emerge to capitalize on this beverage trend, right? Custom cold beverage drink machines for various brands. I've seen.
First thing comes to mind, Batrice.
Exactly.
But
technology generally, David, what trends do you have insight to in terms of what technologies are brands innovating with, right? What are they looking at, piloting, having success with? Similar to the menu side, but just on the tech side.
Yeah, so I actually just did a study for a client where I interviewed about 25 restaurant executives, big, you know, top 500 restaurant chains on tech trends. And I would say universally tech is being used to enhance the experience. Now, I think everybody's realized that people go to restaurants for hospitality. They go for an experience. They go for, you know, something that you can't quite capture in technology. And so the investments that are being made are ways to either sort of grease the transaction or erase some of the inefficiencies in the transaction. And so obviously ordering technologies within the drive-through, voice bots and AI is huge. You know, I'm still not convinced that kiosks are the way to go, but a number of chains have kiosks in addition to people being able to order at a counter. But beyond that, you know, in full service restaurants, the payment systems and the, you know, the Toasts of the world that you can order and then print out and pay all in one thing, I think are big investments. But a lot of the investments are happening either behind the scenes, back of house, kitchen display systems, you know, ordering systems that communicate with the kitchen, making it more efficient, making your forecasting more efficient so that you are not wasting as much food or you're meeting demand easier and faster. Yeah. Big investment for chains that have off-premise in the ordering app. And really the win there is not, it's certainly easing or making the transaction easier, but it's also the data that you're capturing on your customer, right? These loyalty apps are ultimately about customer intimacy and finding out more about your customers and being able to target them much more specifically. So I think, you know, a lot of it, you know, I talked to a number of chains about things like automation, robotics, and, you know, and while there's some restaurant chains that are automating, I think full automation of kitchens is a long way away, if ever.
Is it financially accessible today? I mean, to the single unit operators? I mean, they sound like it's expensive.
It is expensive. Now, I think where the win can be is in leased equipment. But yeah, some of these robotics or robotic arms are woefully expensive to buy. Leasing it, but the ROI has got to be there. And what we've found and what we've seen and what I've heard from restaurants is, even in restaurants that have done a lot of automation, and you know, Sweetgreen comes to mind, and you know, the Chipotle and some of the Chipotle make lines that they've invested in, you're not really removing a full-time employee. You're not removing an FTE. You're transitioning that person maybe into a higher value added activity, or you're making them do something that might enhance the guest experience or might make them feel better. But the ROI is not in labor savings, right? You're not taking people out of the restaurant. And so I think the question on automation is, how can you redeploy staff to drive guest satisfaction better, which ultimately, you know, brings them back more or increases frequency or guest satisfaction, or reduces turnover by making the job more interesting than just sitting in the back cutting potatoes for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So I think the automation is expensive. But what I've also heard, especially for full service restaurants, is there's a lot of different things that get dropped in a fryer, for example. And so having a robotic arm, you know, is a lot more complicated than just dropping fries. Maybe you got to drop wings and it's a different time, or maybe you got to drop onion rings, or you got to drop fries, or, you know, and so there's, and it just gets complicated. And the more complicated a back of house is, the kitchen is, and the more complex a menu is, the harder it is to automate that. And so that's why you see burger flippers or the beverage player, right? I mean, you know, there are things that can be automated relatively easily. And some QSRs lend themselves to that. But I think sit-down restaurants, full-service restaurants with a broader menu, very hard to automate that. And frankly, the back of house is not that big, right? The kitchen's not that big to put a big, you know, robotic arm somewhere. So I'm optimistic that, you know, technology is evolving and helping operators become more efficient. But I've kind of come to the conclusion that I'm not, you know, there's efficiencies and margin enhancements. But, you know, if you ask me, what does a restaurant 5 years from now look like? You know, there's probably going to be some tech-driven restaurants, but I think it's, you know, it's still going to be a very labor-heavy, labor-driven, hospitality-forward industry, because that's what we are. That's what we do.
Yeah, it feels like in some ways we're driving back to the 1930s, 40s automats, where you just go and you pull something out of a wall, right?
Those cool
automats.
Yeah, no, we looked at those automats, and, you know, and I mean, you're right. Those were around almost 100 years ago.
Those are pickup lockers, really, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and we do see areas like micro markets, right? So these sort of unattended retail taking over and doing really well. And they're replacing a lot of manned food service in places like business cafeterias, colleges, places like that, right? Where, you know, and return to work hasn't brought people back 5 days a week. And so let's put an automated, unmanned micro market there. There's a lot of tech solutions that do make sense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, within restaurants specifically, I'm still, you know, I think the people still are the difference makers for a lot of restaurant companies.
What kind of restaurants have to be most concerned about C-store and grocery upping their food game?
Yeah. You know, C-store, there is, we've been talking, I think, for 20 years about C-stores being sort of the lurking giant for QSRs, right? And if you talk about C-stores, there's about 140,000, I think, C-stores, something like that. There's, you know, about 350,000 limited service restaurants. So, you know, they're a pretty sizable piece. I think the occasion lends itself mostly to the competition with fast food restaurants, just because, you know, generally people aren't dining at C-stores, although, you know, some Wawa or Sheetz, right? Some of these have, like, you know, pretty attractive dining options. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for the most part, C-stores are really going to be competing, and particularly on some of those beverage occasions, right? Or on some of these grab-and-go occasions. I think, you know, with some exceptions, though, C-stores, they've invested heavily in food service. They're trying to make it work. In some cases, they are making it work. But I still think as an industry, C-stores have not figured out food service yet. I think some certain operators have. I think of Quick Trip up in Wisconsin. Again, I mentioned Sheetz and Wawa. There's a number of them. I think 7-Eleven's invested heavily, and they've kind of got some hit or miss in within their system. But but it's still mostly coffee, right? It's still mostly beverage programs and packaged sandwiches and things like that. And so that next evolution of C-stores has to really be a high quality, almost dining experience. And, they're still primarily fulfilling the same occasion as maybe a drive-through would, right? Or, a quick grab and go occasion at a fast food restaurant.
All right. So we're getting close to time, and I'm going to do a little something different today as we land the plane, so to speak. I got three, what I call rapid fire questions, not so rapid, but it only takes a quick response. And so first one here, you can only track three metrics for next year to understand the restaurant industry. What are they?
I would say traffic, same store sales, and menu prices.
Okay. And what's one trend that should die already? Is he even talking about trends? And then what's one that needs more attention?
What's a trend that should die?
That may be a little too contentious. So you're allowed to say pass if it gets in trouble.
let me think about that. But one that should probably receive more attention. It's a great question, because a lot of what we talked about are things that are, starting to emerge and come. I think, Asian cuisine is a trend we're seeing emerge. I think there's a lot of Asian restaurants. I think there's things like boba teas. So there's a beverage component to it. There's Korean spicy chicken. Right? I mean, all of that stuff is coming. I don't know if it's a hidden gem, because I mean, obviously there's a huge growth there. But it's one thing we haven't talked about. And so I think, the rise of Asian influences throughout the restaurant industry is one to keep an eye on. It might not be an unhidden or a trend that needs more focus, but it is something to keep an eye on, because there's a ton of things happening with not only Asian chains coming here, but just Asian products and influence working their way onto menus.
Okay, I'll let you pass on the one that should die. That might be a little too contentious. So here's my last one to take us out with. Technomic gets invited to build the ultimate restaurant of the future. What's in it?
What's in it from a technology?
I don't know if you guys have to worry about menu, but I'm probably going to say it's probably going to be some Asian fusion cuisine based on my last answer.
I think there is. The technology platform is such that there's seamless communication between the ordering system, back of house. I think it has a drive-through, because we continue to see off-premise orders. I think these QSRs that are doing multiple drive-through lanes, not only for consumers but for off-premise pickup orders, third-party delivery, et cetera, are smart, because it's just again, eliminating some of the obstacle to, and just making it a little bit more frictionless experience. So I think it's got multiple drive-throughs. I think there's geofencing to help identify consumers and let us as a restaurant know when they're coming. Mm. I think, invest heavily. I would invest heavily in an app. Payment systems, one of the things that is always the biggest driver of dissatisfaction in sit-down restaurants is waiting to pay the check, and so that technology can help eliminate that. So I think there's a good mix of technology, but well-trained servers and a fully staffed restaurant with a highly desirable menu, and there's still a lot of room to succeed in the industry. And I think it's not rocket science, this hospitality, but I think so many times we've kind of gotten away from what the core part of the business is, which is hospitality and treating people with respect and giving them what they want and giving them a great experience and occasion. And so, train them up, and I would make sure that we have some top-notch servers and great world-class chefs. And I think you've got a winner there.
All right, we're going to go eat the restaurant when it opens. I'm ready. Anything to close out here, Chad, before we wrap up for today?
This has been fantastic, David. This is definitely the kind of conversation that could go for 2 or 3 hours. We'll have to have a part 2 if you're willing, because I didn't even get half my questions.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to join anytime. Just let me know. And I appreciate you guys having me on. This has been a lot of fun for me too. And hope to see you in person at some industry event coming up.
Absolutely. And you got a great voice for radio. I won't say face because of a bad comment, but the voice is great for radio.
You've got a face for radio. Rich. Believe me, I've heard that before.
That's what people tell me all the time. Well, everybody, and first, David, thank you so much for investing the time with us today. I know there's probably a lot of people that ask you to come on their platforms, and we're greatly appreciative. We're fans of what Technomic does and Informa. We love anything that tries to help people. You know, whether it's the operator or the technology companies, we want to make sure that people succeed. And I think you're part of that roadmap if they're smart and they look at what's out there available to them. So thank you for what you and what Technomic do. And thanks for spending time with us. Last question I always ask at the end of these is where are people going to be able to see you next? I know you said that you want to see us, and absolutely, but where can people that want to see you maybe run into you or hear your next great speech or presentation?
Yeah, I've got a couple sales meetings I'm doing for clients, but I would say the next big conference, I'm going to be at our Global Restaurant Leadership Conference in Barcelona in November. And Informa is also doing a Future of Beverage conference also in November down in Austin, Texas. And so, those two are probably the next big things. I know we've got Informa has an FS Tech, conference coming up in September. I won't be there, at least as of now, but, some of the later fall events I'll be there, and hopefully, you guys and many of the listeners that are tuning in will also be there. And I'd love to see all of you if that works out.
Absolutely. Well, David, thank you. Chad, as always, thank you, my brother, for joining me here. And a big, big thank you to the audience and the people to make this all possible for us to give us time and attention, interest in the subjects we bring and the guests that we have. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be sharing this episode here in a couple of weeks. However, we will be getting out some short form content that you'll be seeing. And I don't know why I'm saying that, because you're going to hear this after it's dropped. So that's useless information, everybody. Anyways, thank you so much. And this has been Chat GTM with David Henkes from Technomic. Have a blessed day. Thank you for tuning in. And please keep running your restaurants right. Treat your people great. And thanks for listening to us. And have a great day.